Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
When it comes to European economies, the outlook couldn't be bleaker. So, Graham, this is what the IMF has said. Half of the European Union and one-third of the world facing a recession for the year 2023. The reasons? The war in Ukraine, rising interest rates, and high prices. A couple of the hardest-hit economies, the UK, France, and Germany, who are avid supporters of the Ukraine war. But what about their citizens? Shouldn't they be given priority over billions of euros spent on weapon supplies? That's the focus of this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guests. Peter Koenig, former World Bank economist, joins us from Lima, Peru. Also joining us is Shabir Rizvi, economic analyst, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Let me start with you, Peter Koenig, and let me ask you a very straightforward question when it comes to this topic, because this would set the stage, at least your point of view. And that is, do you believe that the disruption caused by the Russian President Vladimir Putin's special military operation in Ukraine has tipped several European countries into a recession and affected their economies, like raising their inflation rate in those countries and, of course, squeezing, for example, their energy supplies?
Well, thank you. First of all, thank you very much for having me. My quick answer is not at all. Absolutely not. The war has nothing to do with what's happening in Europe. Let me go through what I think and what I pretty much am sure what's happening in Europe. In one word, is the European Commission, the European Union, or particularly the Commission, is committing suicide, economic suicide, and they do it wantingly. When I'm saying Europe, I'm referring to the people of I'm not referring to the people of Europe. They are upset. This is one of the reasons why they are in the streets and strike from France to Germany to Italy to Greece and more. They are against all this money that flows to a war to kill more people, an endless war basically that can never overcome whatever they want to do with it. As long as the European Commission, as it is structured today, stays in place, and as long as the key European leaders are implants, and I call them implants, of the World Economic Forum, of the WEF, the outlook for Europe is bleak, not just for this year, for the coming year. Just to name a few of these implants, so the people around the world get an idea. Ursula von der Leyen, unelected president, accent on unelected. Olaf Scholz, German Chancellor, and before him, Angela Merkel. Emmanuel Macron, President of France. Mark Rutte, Netherlands, and many, many more. They are all have been put there in their position by the World Economic Forum. They are all have dictatorial strains, and some of them even tyrannical. They are all graduates of the World Economic Forum's Academy for Young Global Leaders. Not too long ago, I think it was either on or before the last Davos meeting of the WEF, Klaus Schwab has boasted that he and the WEF are proud having been able to infiltrate government the world with the WEF's young global leaders.
Mm-hmm.
That says it all. I'm currently staying in a country that has a WEF implant as president. That's Peru. Dina Boluarte is a WEF young global leader. Maybe you have followed what happened in Peru since last December when the parliament dismissed the elected president, Pedro Castillo, put him in jail without a trial. And the resulting chaos caused tens and tens of deaths. I think by now it's close to 100. Not to forget Christine Lagarde. She literally runs the European Central Bank in a European economic fashion's prison, I would say. She has recently been recorded saying that not only central bank digital currency, or CBDC, is the future, but she added already now paying for anything with 1,000 euros in cash is forbidden. It will be punishable by fine and even prison.
So,
yes, you heard right. She said it's prison.
So,
this is an economic tyranny, and under an economic tyranny, nothing can thrive.
Okay, just quickly, so I can get to Shabir Rizvi. So you're saying that the WEF is promoting this transition, if I may use that word, and with these officials that you say are somewhat handpicked, if I understood you correctly, from the WEF, we're looking at the way that these officials are reacting to the Ukraine war to be directed by the WEF in some sense because of the grand plan. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yes, you do. You understand me correctly. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
We can go back a step further and look at the Great Reset, which was written by Klaus Schwab.
Maybe we'll get to that. Let me get to Shabir Rizvi. So Shabir Rizvi, that was a very deep outlook there and point of view given by our guest, Peter Koenig. But let's look at what the IMF has said about the European Union, Europe as a whole, really, in terms of it being in a recession for the year 2023. And the reasons that it cited, which was in the intro, the war in Ukraine, rising interest rates and prices. So there you have it in black and white somewhat. Do you agree with what the IMF has said in its assessment, especially when it comes to the war in Ukraine?
Well, look, our colleague, your guest from Lima, has quite profoundly expressed the malaise that is existing in the European Union, UK, and the whole of the Western world, which counts for 13% of the world population, while 87% live outside the so-called European and Western sort of powers and nations. What you've got to remember is that the politicians, whether they're elected or unelected, like the European Union leaders, even the elected politicians really have no worry about not being concerned about their people. The German foreign minister not long ago said that, "I don't care what the public thinks. I will continue to support the Ukraine war." You see, in France, Mr. Macron, for weeks and months, demonstrations are going on in the streets of Paris and other cities in France so that the pension age is not increased from 62 to 64. The parliament, they overrode the democratic process in parliament there, and it has become law in France. Similarly, in UK, strikes are taking place in all industries and all sectors,
right,
and the government is not really listening. So the reality is, Kaveh, is the leaders that are elected or unelected, they really have no concern about the ordinary people. They're there to support the 1% or the ruling elite and the decision makers, whether it's the World Economic Forum or whether it's the money mafia, who really controls what's going on in the capital cities of Europe and North America, Australia, and Canada.
Sure. We've got to talk about some of these countries in Europe, and I'm going to have the topic of UK be addressed to you, Shabir Rizvi. But first, I'm going to go over to Peter Koenig and ask him about Germany, what he thinks about that. You know, Germany is supposed to be the EU's powerhouse, but we're looking at how that economy is being severely impacted by this war in Ukraine. Basically, you have an energy crisis that Germany is feeling, along with supply chain blockages, aging workforce, and also how it's not no longer an export-focused manufacturing. But then you have the aid to Ukraine at $14.2 billion. This is the point here. How do you go and have your economy be affected by supporting a war where you sent that much, whether it's a military assistance or cash, and yet you have your citizens suffer in the way that they are, overall speaking? Why do you think these politicians are not heeding the calls of their citizens?
Well, of course, this is ludicrous. Supporting a war, they should do everything to stop the war, of course, and call for negotiations. But it's exactly the contrary. They want to do as much harm as they can. So, but again, I come to who is leading the European leader of Germany, the European economic leader. Is Olaf Scholz. Olaf Scholz is a scholar of WEF. He has been planted there. He was, and Angela Merkel before him, she was also a scholar of Olaf Scholz, of Klaus Schwab. So Germany is totally in the hands of the WEF. And the WEF itself is actually an executing instrument of big finance, but this is a different story. Right now, who calls the shots on Europe and the Great Reset is the WEF. And all the leaders that have been put in place, they do what the WEF asks them to do. I don't know how much corruption or actually threats are behind all this, but they do what the WEF wants to do. And that is supporting Ukraine against Russia. Of course, this is a drain on the economy in itself. But on the other hand, you know, Germany would not be suffering energy, would not have an energy crisis. Europe wouldn't have an energy crisis if they wouldn't sanction Russia. They're sanctioning Russia by actually not buying Russia's cheap energy, which has been running Europe's economy. So Russia is ready to supply Europe with energy as soon as Europe says, we would like to go back to our contracts.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let me get an idea about what's happening there in the UK from Shabir Rizvi, because I could just throw you these two facts, Shabir Rizvi. The UK economy flatlined in February, no growth in terms of the GDP. And then you have major UK supermarkets that just as recent as March were rationing fruits, I think tomatoes, if I'm not mistaken. And at the same time, you have the UK to contribute, how much money have they contributed? Let me see if I have that in my stats. £2.3 billion. So explain that to us, how officials are making their citizens suffer there in the UK by rationing things like cooking oil and tomatoes while they commit this large amount of money to the Ukraine war.
You asked me explain. It's very difficult to explain madness. So what one's got to really understand is that there are three aspects that really hit the British economy very severely. One is that we've had mortgage increases, which have taken place from virtually 1% to almost 6% interest rate. So that's feeding in to sort of eating away the residual incomes that people would have had. Secondly, obviously, the energy crisis that we've talked about on this program and others, the increase in energy cost has almost increased by 3 to 4-fold in the last year or so. And thirdly, the manner in which the pay increases are not keeping pace with inflation, as we know the situation of junior doctors in UK being on strike, nurses perhaps going back on strike, the railway workers have been on strike, the post office workers, you name it, all industries virtually, whether in the mostly in the public sector, have gone on strike. Really, to increase their wages and salaries, not to sort of extravagant level, but really to keep pace with inflation in reality. And, you know, the facts and figures are there that the junior doctors are earning 35% less than what they were 10 years ago. Similar sort of figure with the nurses. So it's a huge impact that is taking place. Plus, I think what quite often we forget in commentary is that the level of poverty is quite high. There are some figures which are showing that 1 in 4 people live below the poverty line. And there's a term being caused, thrown around by economists these days, the working poor.
Right.
The working, the income to sort of make decisions which would be supportive for their well-being. And in the UK, you have nearly 5 to 6 million people going to food banks on a daily basis. So, you know, it's a huge impact that is taking place here as far as the economy is concerned and people's living standards are concerned.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand. I mean, Peter Koenig, our guest, talked about or used the adjective madness. I mean, what are the European officials thinking, do you think, Peter Koenig? Because at the same time, you have the U.S. that has been now blamed by many European officials that they are... that the U.S. is profiting most from this war on things like gas, which they're selling to Europe at higher prices, or when it comes to the subsidies that obviously are wrecking European industries, as we've been told, and some have actually relocated to the U.S., or when it comes to things like military equipment. Well, when they run out of military equipment to provide Ukraine with, they have to buy more, not only for their own security, but to even give Ukraine more military equipment. And guess who they're buying it from? From the U.S. under the umbrella of NATO. So go figure. Is madness the correct word to use here?
Yes. You know, if it wouldn't be so serious, I would have to laugh. Because this is absolutely right. You know, this has been created artificially. And my interview partner, he talked about inflation. You know, of course you have inflation. If you create artificially an energy crisis, which the Europeans had, I just explained before, then you create an artificial shortage of everything. And if you have an artificial shortage of everything, even fruit, I didn't know they ration fruit in the UK. Then if you have a shortage of everything, then inflation. Obviously, all of these things add together. It's economics 101. But it's all caused willingly by the Europeans, in this case, that follow the American dictate. You know, this is they have been put in place, these leaders, to serve the United States, but not the European people. And this is a crime, and this is a crime which I think should eventually come to justice. I don't know whether it will, but it needs to be pointed out that more people understand what's going on. And that's why I'm speaking so openly and so freely about what I think is going on in Europe. It is really a horrendous crime.
Indeed it is. And guess what, Shebi Rizvi, you have all of this happening, and then you have this piece of news come out just days ago that Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, and his entourage, I think was the word that was used, have profited $400 million from this. So I'm not sure what the White House thinks the officials there, or whoever it is that's okaying all this money, when they hear this piece of news, including obviously Europe. I mean, you know, you can't put that into words, because this shows that Zelensky, which from what the reports indicate is guilty of this, is profiting off this war through fraud. Puts a different light on the situation, doesn't it?
Well, it was very clear even before the special operation by Russia that Ukraine was one of the most corrupt nations in Europe, if you like. There were many articles written in the New York Times and the Washington Post over the years prior to sort of Zelensky and the Ukraine cause has become the cause celeb, if you like, in Europe. Prior to that, it was very clear. Articles were written on a regular basis showing how corrupt the government was there, and the whole system was corrosive in an ethical manner. But what is interesting is that this is a sort of same thing keeps on happening to America. And obviously one can say that, you know, it's not unintentional. We saw this in Afghanistan where there were, you know, thousands and thousands of soldiers on the payroll, but really nothing was paid. And the sort of the rulers at that time in Kabul were siphoning off millions of dollars. Similar sort of thing is happening here, where you know, decoy companies have set up, been set up by Zelensky and his you know, friends and cronies, who are sort of profiting by having armaments coming into Ukraine, whereby right. they can sort of milk the sort of funding organizations. So the reality is that corruption is rife. Corruption is there. It's an you know, it's an epidemic, really. Right. In Ukraine, and the sooner our elite, and the elite are not going to realize, because as I said, it's complete madness. But if the ordinary people realize that, you know, their tax payments are really being given to a corrupt okay. regime in Kiev.
All right. So the last question that I ask here, because I think you're going to fill the rest of the time with this one, Peter Koenig, is regarding France. Now it's really interesting how obviously France also has been impacted by this special military operation of Russia vis-a-vis Ukraine in terms of the cost of living crisis overall where France is experiencing. You have that on the one hand, and actually Macron does want this war to end. And he made that very clear when he visited China recently. But what came out of that trip was interesting in terms of his viewpoint, where he said that you know, France should not, and Europe as a whole, should not be a vassal state of the U.S., okay, so that's on the one hand, and that you have this large, extremely large business delegation that accompanied Macron. And guess who else accompanied Macron? The European Commission President von der Leyen, with huge, obviously, MOUs to be signed with China. Do you think that there is a break, especially after the French President's visit to China, when it comes to the U.S.? Of course, this was about China and decoupling from it, that may spill over to Ukraine now, if it hasn't already, and its support from the EU?
Well, it would be too much to hope for that there would be a break. But I think Macron himself is so full of himself and wanting to lead Europe that it would be very difficult. He also dragged along somebody who was not welcome in China at all. That's Madame von der Leyen. If you see the pictures on how she was received at the airport, or not received at all, it tells you everything without even having to speak about it. And Macron himself, what he attempted to do, and that I guess was his role by the WEF, is separating China from Russia. Of course, there he failed miserably. So as an in disguise, he brought along business people to bring back hopefully some contracts. But I doubt very much how serious it is to break off, because if he would break off the Europe, if he would, his tendency would be to help breaking off Europe from the United States. That would be meaning also breaking with the WEF, making Europe autonomous again. bringing back Europe to a sovereign nation state. That would be a good thing. That's actually the solution that should happen. But I doubt very much that Macron is up to that at this point.
Thank you.
But I would really like to suggest something that I think is maybe an illusion, but many illusions have eventually come through. And this would be the famous Leninist question, you know. The most simple and especially in the medium and long-term run, effective solution would be, you know, get rid of the Economic Commission, dissolve the entire European Union, and get back to jump forward to individual autonomous and sovereign nation states with their own currency. I think, you know, de-dollarize the economy. I know you're running out of time.
Sorry.
But I think it is important that this point is made and that people realize how bad the European Union, the European mission is for Europe.
De-dollarization is being done. We'll find out in South Africa when the BRICS meet, but I'm sure a lot is going to come out of that. Thank you, Peter Koenig, former World Bank economist. Shabir Rizvi, economic analyst from London. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Tafoy and the team. It's goodbye.
This is A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the importance of giving thanks. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, may his peace and blessings be upon Muhammad and his pure immaculate family. Salaamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You are listening to A to Z, an Islamic lifestyle. I'm Farhad, your host, and we are here together to learn more about Ramadan. So what are the points we should always pay attention to, especially during the holy month of Ramadan, is remembering God's blessings. One of the most important blessings of God is the health of the body, because the body is a vehicle on which the soul rise to achieve divine goals. And generally, a person deprived of the blessings of health can hardly participate in the worship of God. So, if we can fast during the month of Ramadan, we should thank God for the blessing of health. Gratitude from God's blessing is indeed the most important key to happiness. This is because when we remember God's blessing and see them in our lives, hope raises in our hearts. Moreover, gratitude from God's blessings attracts further blessings. As the Prophet ﷺ said, God's blessings are fleeting, like wild animals running away, so bend them with gratitude. To be grateful for God's blessings, we must remember them. Consequently, paying attention to the blessings that God has given us is the best way to thank God, provided it has got a condition, and that is we should know and we have always remembered that the source of these blessings is God's mercy and grace. This way of thinking about things makes people happy and prevents them from feeling depressed. So, for the very first step of giving thanks to God because of his blessings is to remembering them and try to count his blessings, his divine blessings in our life with ourselves. And we can talk about the blessings we have, about the good family we have, about good children we have, about the spiritual life we have. They are very great blessings. And if we're remembering them and try to remind our souls about these blessings, this is the first step of giving thanks to God the Almighty.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back, my dear brothers and sisters. You are listening to A to Z on Islamic Life and Style. I am Farhad, your host. So in the previous part, we talked about how important it is to remember the blessings of God, because that awakens hope in people's hearts. So by remembering God's blessings, we can awaken hope in our heart. On the other hand, a man will lose all that he has if he does not remember and appreciate God's benefits. For the devil will expose his weaknesses and faults and make him feel regret and depression in his heart. So, as I said in the previous part, by remembering God's blessing, we can protect our heart from feeling regret, from feeling depression. But if we forget them, the Satan will expose our heart through weaknesses and faults, and we will always remember our weaknesses and faults with ourselves, and that makes us feel regret and depression. In this case, man sees no benefit in doing good and begins to heal this pain with worldly pleasures, and because he despairs of God's mercy, he will not renounce any single sin, and he opens his eyes when everything is over. It is very important not to allow the devil to sow the seeds of despair in our hearts by forgetting God's blessings, so that he can drag us along and deprive us from the God's mercy. So, I hope everyone to stay safe from the temptations of the Satan. Thank you for listening to us, and I hope a very good time and a pleasure time in the Ramadan month.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir. Our email is english@irib.ir.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
At a rate of 6%, inflation in France is still at its worst since the 1980s. However, new data shows that all important food prices continue to push to unseen levels, having leapt a whopping 16% since last year.
I'm a shopkeeper, but I also grow wheat and raise cattle. So I can tell you that those who are raising their prices the most are the big corporations. The small producers suffered and tried for a long time not to raise their prices. But now everyone is raising their prices. For example, chicken is up 30% this year.
From April through June, there will be price caps on certain goods, following last month's acceptance by major retailers and middlemen of a government initiative. It's expected to cost them hundreds of millions of euros. However, many say they can afford it. Ever-increasing corporate profits have been the norm across Europe since 2009. And in the post-COVID world, many analysts say that corporate price gouging, government-approved speculation, and stockholder profit hoarding are the hidden driver of Europe's high prices.
Il faut prendre des mesures autoritaires.
We must take authoritarian measures. There's simply no other way. We must implement price controls, the indexing of wages to prices, and much more. But a government must have the will to do such things. And that takes us back to the necessity of choosing an alternative political path than our current model.
Polls show that 96% of France agrees with the statement that some suppliers are opportunistically taking advantage of inflation. Opportunism aside, the soaring prices are the enduring result of the West's failed sanctions campaign against Russia over the long-term unrest in the Ukraine. Instead of sowing peace and reaping low prices, the European Union is finding that belligerence backfires, and especially for the average person. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Israel's atrocities against Palestinians have intensified during the holy month of Ramadan, including the recent savage attack on worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. The regime in Tel Aviv has been condemned in the European Parliament.
We haven't as much as sanctioned them in any way. We have occupied territories where we import products from. We have sent no signals to Israel that we condemn what they are doing.
Compared to previous debates on the subject, it appears more and more EU legislators are willing to call Israel out.
We see growing violence, expansion plans for illegal settlements, a de facto annexation turning into a covert de jure annexation, daily discrimination against Palestinians, demolitions.
It is clear that the regime still enjoys much support in the European Parliament.
To be honest, I feel strong sympathy with Israel.
However, many EU lawmakers express support for protesters who have been taking to the streets of Israel in huge numbers.
The Prime Minister has to guarantee that hate speech against political opponents and extremist positions expressed by cabinet ministers do not further encourage a circle of violence.
Campaigners suggest regime members are currently under pressure like never before.
The Zionist entity is in a serious crisis, mainly because of the Palestinian resistance, but also because of the resistance in the region, from Iran to Iraq to Al-Yemen to Lebanon, and also Palestinians' diaspora.
It's claimed anyone with a mobile phone who criticizes Israeli authorities is now a potential target.
The Pegasus spyware developed and distributed by an Israeli company is being widely used to target human rights defenders, journalists and political opponents across the world, including in our union.
Despite the obvious challenges, rights campaigners remain optimistic. They insist it's not a matter of if Palestinians will ever see freedom, liberation and victory, but when. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The price of a month's worth of rent in the British capital has soared by an average of more than 16% over the past year, with the average rent price reaching a record $2,910 a month, the highest in the country. In other big cities, such as in Manchester, it's gone up to more than 20%, and in Birmingham, more than 17%. Alex, who asked not to be identified, shared a house in West London with his partner and another couple for 2 years, but had to move when the rent skyrocketed.
The contract that we originally had was 3 years with a two-year break clause. Our original contract state being £2,800 a month, but we had an email from our landlord stating that it's going to be increased to £4,000, which I think is a little over 40%.
Property experts say higher mortgage interest rates and taxation are forcing landlords to either increase the rent or withdraw their properties from the market, sending renters fighting over available properties.
It's really not a good time for tenants and renters in general. You know, we've seen that
any one property will have multiple offers. Quite just recently, we did a viewing on a flat, a two-bedroom flat in Ruislip, West London, where we did 14 viewings and we have 14 offers.
But what is the reason behind the increase in demand? A housing deficit is one reason. Britain has a backlog of 4.3 million homes that are missing from the national housing market, as they were never built. Another is a rise in net migration.
So now that's because of Ukraine, refugees coming in from there. It's also because of the situation with Hong Kong and because of the increases in the numbers of international students coming into the UK as well. Now, with these groups of people, they tend to move into places like London or big cities like Birmingham or Manchester.
Calls for a rent freeze are growing, but that is yet to happen. And pressures on the rental market are not expected to ease anytime soon. Saeed Pariza, London.
Iran has marked its National Army Day, with forces from all units of armed forces holding parades in major cities, including the capital, Tehran. Combat units of the army, helicopters, fighter jets, air defense systems, and portable naval equipment took part in the parades. Also, indigenously developed military equipment, including drones and missiles, were displayed. Addressing the event, Iran's president, Ebrahim Raisi, hailed the achievements made by Iran's armed forces, saying any threat to Iran's security will get quick and powerful response.
The Iranian armed forces ensure security not only for their own country, but for the entire region. The Iranian army is now equipped with state-of-the-art technologies to defend territorial integrity. The extra-regional and American forces should leave the region as soon as possible because it is in their own interests and in the interests of the region. The enemy, especially the Zionist regime, have received this message that the slightest move against the country will evoke a severe response from the armed forces and will be accompanied by the destruction of Haifa and Tel Aviv.
Iranian military experts and technicians have in recent years made great headways in manufacturing a broad range of equipment, making the armed forces self-sufficient in the arms sphere.
The army has been furnished with new weaponry, equipment and technologies that are necessary for fighting the contemporary wars and appropriate for the possible wars of future. The Iranian armed forces are now able to fight off any power intending to violate the country's territories, commit an act of aggression, or upset the balance of power.
Iran maintains that its military power poses no threat to the regional countries, saying that the Islamic Republic's defense doctrine is entirely based on deterrence. The National Army Day, which is celebrated annually on April 18th, was named by the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini, back in 1979.
The latest achievements displayed by different units of the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran were only part of Iran's military might, which has been made possible thanks to the efforts of Iranian engineers and specialists. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
On Palestinian Prisoners' Day, marked every April 17th, protesters in Paris demanded an end to Western silence regarding Israel's horrific and illegal treatment of political prisoners. Since 1948, an estimated 1 million Palestinians have been arrested by Israelis due to waging an average of 10 police raids every single day. Israel arrests about 6,000 adults and 1,000 children annually. A new report revealed that 5,000 Palestinians are currently held in long-term Israeli prisons, including almost 200 children. More than 1,000 people have not even been charged with an alleged crime. Prisoners report that physical and psychological torture is not just routine, but shockingly brutal, and hundreds of Palestinians have died in Israeli custody. Many accuse the international community and Western-led human rights groups of abandoning those ensnared in Israeli occupation prisons.
The image of Israel is getting worse and worse with each passing day. What some don't seem to grasp is that Israel is a colonial project, and all of modern human history shows that the colonialists are the guilty ones, and not those who are colonized. The only choice Israel has is to stop its attempt to colonize Palestine.
Europe's longest-serving political prisoner is a pro-Palestinian resistance fighter held in France, Georges Ibrahim Abdullah, who has become lionized as the Arab Nelson Mandela. Abdullah still refuses to recant his support for Palestine, and his continued imprisonment is widely viewed as a flagrant politicization of France's legal system.
The mistreatment and unjust incarceration of Georges Abdullah shows how France is directly involved in today's Middle Eastern politics. Releasing Abdullah back to Lebanon would threaten French imperialist and political interests in the region, and also those of its allies in the United States and Israel. Abdullah is a hero worldwide, and we insist on his immediate parole, which was initially granted over 20 years ago.
In neighboring Germany, protests in favor of Palestinian Prisoners' Day were banned. The Israeli occupation means that Palestinians endure terrorist tactics every single day. The brutality is even worse for those political prisoners stuck in Israeli jails. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Thousands of pro-Palestine activists from across the UK marched on Downing Street Sunday to mark the International Quds Day. They joined millions of other demonstrators engaging in similar action all across the globe with the aim of empowering the Palestinian cause and condemning Zionism, the political ideology endeavouring to forcefully evict Palestinians from their historic homeland.
Initiated by the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1979, International Quds Day is marked on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. However, in recent years in Europe, the day has come under attack, with critics trying to get the day banned.
Pro-Israel activists say the march is anti-Semitic, an accusation dismissed by organizers and attendees, including anti-Zionist religious Jews.
Those who conflate Judaism with Zionism, they are the ones who are being anti-Semitic, because they are the ones who are trying to turn a nuanced, thousands of years long history of a religion into one monolith for political reasons.
We have lived thousands of years with Muslims, the Arabs, without peace and any problem. This is nothing to do. We are standing for justice. There's no justice in what's going on here. I'm talking to the whole world now. It's not only, unfortunately, here the victims are Palestinian people. And the international community know this. And they're not doing anything for God knows why.
And the fact that Almighty mentioned Al-Aqsa in the Quran, it is a religious obligation to protect and safeguard this location and this place. And not only that, wherever there is pain and suffering, like there is oppression and zulm, and the people are living under occupation. So it becomes even more important as a religious obligation to really do whatever we can.
According to reports, German authorities have banned the rally for the third consecutive year, due to be held in Berlin on April the 15th. Efforts to ban the procession here in London have so far remained fruitless. Many attendees believe the march is the last true space platforming free speech to criticize Israel and the ideology behind it, something which is rarely platformed elsewhere. Robert Carter, London.
Illegal US sanctions on Iran are opening new windows of opportunities to do business with other countries. Following a recent visit by Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister for Economic Diplomacy, Mehdi Safari, New Delhi and Tehran are exploring new areas of trade. Despite the sanctions, the two countries have vowed to improve trade relations, especially in transport, IT, pharmaceuticals, biotechnology, culture, education and tourism. The two nations are now looking for options to boost joint manufacturing across industries.
India and Iran can have a joint ventures as far as processing is concerned, processing of semi-manufactured and manufactured industrial products, processing and manufacturing of semiconductors and electronics products. And Iran is a very conducive country to have electronics industry on a big scale.
Experts say the Iranian port of Chabahar could be a focal point for investments and will help boost trade with India, Afghanistan, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Russia, Central Asia and Europe. India is among Iran's top five trade partners. Their bilateral trade is currently worth $1.3 billion. Imports and exports include rice, tea, sugar, fresh fruits, pharmaceuticals, soft drinks and industrial machinery, among others. The two countries are planning to triple their trade over the next 5 years.
While the sanctions may remain as they are, and countries may have, like say, Indo and the U.S., their relationship may continue as it is on mutual interest based. But at the same time, they can overcome certain shortcomings while having trade and bilateral ventures between Iran and India in spite of those bottlenecks. Like, say, the Europe and Russia, they are trading in oil despite the American sanctions and the Ukraine policy.
Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Safari said exports to India grew 60% in 2022 and are becoming increasingly independent of oil. Expressing his country's willingness to meet India's energy needs, he said the two nations enjoy huge potential and opportunities to invest in infrastructure, tourism, as well as manufacturing projects. Iran has also offered to extend a subsea natural gas pipeline from Oman to India.
India and Iran are continuing consultations for trade in local currencies, as well as an alternate payment settlement mechanism to SWIFT. Experts say historic Indo-Iran relations have much room for improvement. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Shia jurisprudence or Shia thoughts and beliefs is a subject that used to be taught in national educational centers in mostly Shia settling areas of Afghanistan. But now, the Ministry of Higher Education in Afghanistan has decided to exclude the subject from educational system. The Council of Shia Scholars has negotiated the matter with the ministry, saying the decision is detrimental.
Applying restriction on the followers of a religion has countless disadvantages, especially on national unity. Such restrictions also deprive a certain population of their absolute rights. Naturally, when people are deprived of their rights, they might not show proper cooperation with the government because people expect their government not to ignore their rights.
The Ministry of Higher Education says it's committed to providing good and necessary services to all citizens of the country, but it cannot implement this case for some reasons.
Three days after our negotiations with the Ministry of Higher Education, they announced that they excluded Shia jurisprudence because they want to make a single curriculum for education throughout the country. They also said teaching two jurisprudences might sparkle unrest among students. But of course, none of these reasons are acceptable to us, as we have seen Shia jurisprudence was taught for years in the country without causing any problem. Anyway, we will continue to claim our rights from the legal standpoint.
The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan is under immense pressure by the international community to create an inclusive government and to respect the rights of minorities. With the education system in Afghanistan being highly controversial since the Taliban took power, especially after the group barred girls from going to school and university, many believe that implementing such measure have contributed to the international isolation of the Taliban. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
Under the watchful gaze of South Africa's own anti-apartheid icons, they came out to highlight the plight of the Palestinian people again. For decades, many of those here have marched annually to the gates of Parliament, demanding decisive action from the government, which itself fought a racist supremacist regime once.
We need to break diplomatic ties with Israel, as well as economic ties with them. They should become a pariah state. We shouldn't have any sort of diplomatic visits to Israel, as well as from Israel. And they should be made to feel demonized on a global scale.
In a groundbreaking move just weeks ago, Parliament passed a motion to downgrade ties with the Israeli regime. But questions remain whether the ANC-led government will see this through. After years of advocating neutrality, South Africa took a more resolute stance against Israel at the African Union, preventing the Zionist regime from gaining observer status. Representatives from the ruling party participated in the International Quds Day march to Parliament here and agreed more needs to be done.
We need legal action, both from United Nations. There's a duplicity of especially Western countries around this matter. It's very clear that Israel is being isolated on this. The Middle East is coming too. There's a strong, overwhelming critical mass of all countries and freedom-loving people saying that enough is enough and this atrocities must stop. So we as South Africa, we call on this. We believe this. We will be continuing to fight for the cause of the Palestinian people.
South Africa withdrew its ambassador from Israel in 2018, but the Israeli ambassador still enjoyed full diplomatic status here. The parliamentary motion pledges to expel Tel Aviv's representative and downgrade the embassy to a liaison office. Underpinned by the vision of International Quds Day for those who have protested here annually, the latest moves are a victory indeed. Hassan Siri, Cape Town.
God's Month. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, Salam and welcome to another episode of this series. The end time is the period of seditions and catastrophes. Wicked forces have employed all their power to spread their dominance in the world and stabilize it everywhere. Satan and its agents are doing their best to drag more and more people into sin and transgression. This is while there is no prophet or infallible imam to show the right path and show the true aspect of everything. That's why we read in the last part of Dua Iftitah, which has been recommended by Imam Mahdi for the nights of Ramadan. O Allah, indeed we complain to you the loss of our prophet, our blessings upon him and his progeny, and the absence of our master. Whoever does not see his leader and cannot communicate with him will naturally be distraught and dismal. He will complain to God as the prophet has passed away and the last infallible imam is in occultation too. However, this complaint does not mean protesting, but it means taking refuge and entreating for mercy and favor in the middle of oppression and corruption dominating everywhere. There are many narrations on the seditions and tough conditions of the end time and how hard it is to keep one's faith. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says, I give you one example. A man has some wheat. He dusts it and cleans it from bitter and black seeds and saves it in a store. After a while, he notices that part of the wheat has been infected with pest. He cleans the pest and again saves the remaining wheat. He does it several times so that there remain hard seeds which are not affected by pest. In the end time too, people of feeble faith will be separated from those who stay firmly in their faith and religion and practicing it, and seditions will not harm them. The 5th infallible successor of the prophets, Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, was asked when Imam Mahdi will appear and rise up. He answered, when false testimonies are accepted, just witnesses are rejected, and people trivialize bloodshed, adultery, and usury. It seems that we live in an era in which many of these vices have materialized. This has made it very difficult to keep faith and religion. Prophet Muhammad, blessings